continue on Monday, and joined by a Marine that sent me an email, and honestly made my day probably over a week ago. And his name is Josh Gilkey. Josh, you're a corporal, right?
Yeah.
And so I shared parts of that with everybody here. So, Josh, first of all, thanks for doing this, and welcome to All Marine Radio.
Appreciate you having me. It's pretty cool to be going through something like this and have someone to be able to listen to my story.
Well, I'll tell you what's even cooler is, you know, I think the character your story takes on is to honor your brother, right? And I think that's an even cooler part of this whole story is how that comes through in this whole story. So let's talk about you a little bit. First of all, born and raised where?
Idaho Falls, southeastern Idaho, pretty much my whole life.
All right. So you grew up there, and then explain your it's your stepbrother, right?
No, so he's not even biologically related to me. My mom pretty much worked with this lady her whole life, and in the absence of not having a father and my brother, my biological brother, in and out of jail, he was kind of the person that always watched over me and was always the person that was there more than anybody else, pretty much on a daily basis.
Okay, so, and he's the same age as you, he's older than you, he's younger than you?
He would have been 38 this year.
We've been 38 this year. So explain. So you guys are growing up, and he's the guy who takes care of you. Explain that. How does it work?
So basically, every morning I would wake up. My mom was always already gone because she works for a hospital or whatever. So every morning, basically, he would always be ready to take me to school, take me to do whatever I needed to go do, take me to baseball practice, whatever. Whatever I had going on that day, if nobody else was around, he was always going around to take care of me. And through the daily things, taught me how to be a man, taught me how to fish, taught me how to ride a dirt bike, taught me numerous things about life and lessons and numerous things that I could go on and on about.
All right, so touches, how does the Marine Corps get on your radar?
So, when I can't remember how old I was. I was pretty little. My cousin, Robbie, he's actually a gunny out in Camp Pendleton. He got married in his blues. Since then, I was like, holy shit. Holy shit, those look fucking cool. Because all of his buddies showed up to the wedding in their blues. And I was like, fuck, it's like a whole goddamn army.
I was just listening last week to an interview that a guy who was in Kilo 3-5 and wrote a book about it, and the book is part of the reason. It's part of he was a sergeant. Ultimately, gets out in 1946 after World War II as a sergeant, and his name is R.V. Bergen, and he's the book he wrote along with Sledge's book is the basis for the. Part of the basis for the Pacific, and he says the same thing though. He said I saw that uniform, and I thought that was nice. I want to be a Marine, and so let me tell you, there's no small number of Marines that join the Marine Corps because of that uniform, right?
No, definitely not.
You know what? People laugh, but like when you're a civilian, you see that. You're like, that thing's righteous, man. How do I do that? What do I got to do to get one of those? Little do you know. Yo, just sign here. We'll give you some. So when did you join the Marine Corps? What year in high school? Or are you out of high school?
Well,
or what?
So that's the thing. So around my high school years, I started dabbling with smoking weed and hanging around with the wrong crowd. And one of the times I actually got arrested. Well, I didn't get taken into custody. I got put in handcuffs, and I told my brother showed up. He knew the cop that had me in handcuffs. He seen numerous Facebook posts or whatever of me with John, And he called my brother and he's like, hey, I got your old brother here. He's probably doing something he shouldn't be doing. And honestly, there, he's like, what the hell's going on? And I was like, well, just hanging out with my buddies, all that. But, like, this is really going to fuck me up right now. And I started to tear up, and he's like, what's going on? Like, why are you getting all emotional? It's like, one, I'm going to disappoint John. Two, I'm about to go out to California to see my cousin who's in the Marine Corps to see how the everyday life of the Marines is and see how, like, shit is on Marine Corps base and, like, the society around it. And my brother showed up, and he's like, you got it from here? And I was like, my brother took me, basically beat the fucking piss out of me. And, well, he didn't really, like, beat me, but, like, emotionally, mentally, he's just like, a fucking idiot, like, what are you doing? Then a couple weeks later, I got in my car and moved out to Camp Pendleton, specifically 13 area. Lived with my cousin for a few months, see what the Marine Corps was like. Went on to lose about 46 pounds for the enlist in the Marine Corps. And the recruiter out there was dicking me around because you know how San Diego is. They can get anybody any single day. They can get five people to walk in and sign up.
Right.
And so I just kept getting dicked over. He wouldn't respond to my phone calls or nothing. So I called guys back in Idaho, and I was like, how soon would you be able to get me out? And then I enlisted as soon as I got back. Process took a little bit because of that charge. I ended up getting charged with... frequenting, being in a place where drugs were being used and or distributed that night. And I ended up being the only one that got a lawyer and got a doctor disturbing the peace and all that, so it just took a minute for them to, like, type up a waiver on why I had a disturbing the peace and all that shit. But after that, I enlisted, and then I went West Coast, and that was basically how I got into the Marine Corps.
That's a bit of a story. But without your brother, doesn't happen, right?
Definitely not.
Talk to me about your cousin. He's a gunny, so you're living in the 13 area out of Pendleton. And what was that like? Would you just go and hang out with him and check it out? Explain that to me.
So I moved out there. He had three kids at the time. His daughter had severe health issues, basically. Didn't expect her to live past 1 year old. She ended up dying at the age of four.
Wow.
That was another kind of little bit of hardship I went through for a little bit. She basically, like, a breathing tube, feeding tube, everything, constant care. And I just saw how the Marine Corps, they paid for an entire handicap accessible van through the Semper Fi Fund, and I was like, holy shit, that's like a $100,000 van right there. Like, the Marine Corps did that free of charge. Like, what the hell? I saw that. I saw, like, how well taken care of his sons were, because one of them had autism, and so, like, how the Marine Corps take care of that, what programs and stuff like that they had for him. Basically, like, my everyday life, I worked with the Buffalo Wild Wings there in Oceanside so that I could have some money. And I basically just kind of, like, hung out with him. He worked out with me, took me around and basically got me in Marine Corps shape. Got me to lose all that weight.
Yeah, talk to us about that. Losing 45 pounds, that's like, that's not a small amount of weight. Like, did he just PT your ass? Did he clean up the way you ate? What did he do?
Yeah, so, like, we ate healthier, and it helped him because, you know, obviously you have three kids, so he'd, like, eat like shit sometimes because obviously being a dad isn't the easiest way to eat super healthy, and I have the kids, oh, I want fucking chicken nuggets, oh, I want fries, all that shit. Like, he would PT the shit out of me. He would get in his car, and he'd be like, hey, run to the pool. I'll meet you there, and I'd fucking have to run to the pool, and he'd be there waiting for me, fucking swim 20 laps. He's like, all right, I'll meet you at home, run back, and I'd be like, all right, fuck, I guess, whatever, I guess I gotta get there somehow, so. He would just PT the shit out of me whenever he wasn't working. We had figured out, or we'd wake up early as balls in the morning before he had to go to work. And then I'd go about my day either working or hanging out in Oceanside, hanging out with females, just doing whatever, calling home to family, just hanging out, basically. Working out, a lot of running, I actually had a funny-ass picture. I could email it to you. It's the first picture I ever ran. It was over there. In 13 area, I look like I got a pair of tits on me. Took me forever to train. I couldn't even run a full 3 miles without having to stop. And the picture right before I went to boot camp, I was like skinny as shit, and I think I ended up going to boot camp being able to run under 20 minutes. It was crazy as shit. But
under 20, awesome. Under 20 after losing 45 pounds?
Yeah, that was crazy as fuck.
Wow. The what makes you, so you go out there and visit, was there one thing when you said that happened, or do you remember when you said, okay, this is for me, I'm going to do it?
It wasn't really before I moved out. It was before I moved out there when my brother basically came and got me out of the cops' custody. I knew that I needed to change my life, and then as soon as I got to California, I saw everything basically like the Hollywood Marine picture, like how well things are out there, how he lived, like, he took me to the chow hall a few times, like, hey, this is some of the amenities that you need to enjoy, like, these are all of the available gyms, and I'm a freaking gym rat now, and it's like, you gotta go to the gym for free, you get all this, and then the health care that I saw his family getting taken care of, like, multiple times I went with his wife to, like, go to the dentist or whatever, and everything was, like, free, you know, it's just like, holy shit, like, I went to California with the $150 in my pocket that my mom gave me because I didn't have no money. I was broke, didn't know what to do with my life, and I decided, you know, I need to do something or nothing at all, and I chose to do something about it.
Tell you what, it's already an amazing story, and the story gets better. What so you go to boot camp. And you go back to Idaho, right? And then you ship from there to boot camp?
Yeah, so I ship from... you asked I ship to where from Idaho?
To recruit training from
yeah,
from
out to San Diego.
Right, out to San Diego. All right, what was that like? What was your mom's reaction? And what was your brother's reaction?
Well, my brother was really proud. He was super, super proud, to be honest. He was nervous for me because of the attitude that I had, the demeanor I had towards society, the, like, fuck everything, nothing's going to be good enough type, you can't take me down type mentality. And then my mom, she was obviously super proud because my actual biological brother, he never even graduated high school, so I'm like really the first one to ever really do anything. And so I shipped out. My brother wrote me tons of letters. My mom wrote me tons of letters. And then he wasn't able to fly out, but I got to see him as soon as I went on boot leave. When my mom got to San Diego, it was pretty amazing. The whole time through boot camp, I was since I was still kind of chubby looking and shit like that, my DIs slayed the shit out of me. Specifically, my drill hat, when we were on top of the Reaper, hands me my Eagle Globe and Anchor, and he says, fuck, you're fat, but Jesus, you can be cool. that was the reaction I hoped for. But
there's not too many cultures that think that's funny, right?
Yeah.
That's our culture.
Yeah, and so pretty much all of my Marine Corps career so far, it's been the same picture, like, damn, what's this big ass kid doing? And then they see me run, and they're like, fuck. But as soon as I saw my mom, both of us busted down in tears, because like I explained a little bit earlier, it's really not been the easiest. I'm going to graduate high school and go straight into the Marine Corps. I took a year off after high school, didn't know what the fuck I was doing with my life. Smoking weed, doing shit I probably shouldn't have been doing with people I shouldn't have been doing it with. And then as soon as I got in the Marine Corps, I almost had like a sort of stability in my life. And my mom has never been more proud of me in my life. I don't even think she cried that hard at my graduation of high school.
Now, let me tell you, for people that have never seen a graduation at recruit training, it's pretty amazing because you know, your kid leaves your house in whatever state of mess they are. And then, 13 weeks later, you see them again, and they're men.
It's a whole other person.
Yeah, it's a different person. They're leaner. Their shoulders are bigger. Their waist is smaller. Their hair is gone. Their neck is tanned. Their head is tanned. And the parent, I mean, it's it, when you stand or sit in the bleachers and you watch parents, first of all, you know, they're trying to find, you know, their kid out there, their son or daughter. And you know, you'll see whole families, extended families, right? You'll see, you know, mother, father, sister, brother, you know, and then you'll see grandparents. You know, a lot of times the grandparents aren't from the United States. And now their grandson's going to be a United States Marine. And around the world, people know who the Marine Corps is. You know, they know, yeah. They know the history. Well, they know the reputation of Marines. And now, you know, and now my grandson is going to be a Marine. And it's just, you know, you see them get out their these big white handkerchiefs and blowing their noses and doing all that. I mean, it's cool. It is, it'll bring a tear to your eye when you watch it, because it's just a transformational event for a whole lot of families. And so it's really cool. So talk to us about, I know the story gets shitty here. Talk to us about your brother.
What's part specifically like?
Well, I mean, he never got to see all that, right?
No, he never had to fly out. And when I went home on duty, I never actually got to see him in uniform whenever I was in uniform, like saying hi to family or whatever. He was either working or off doing something, so he never got to see me in uniform. And that's one of the things that kind of fucks me up the most. And I never got to see his face in a full reaction other than him, like, obviously looking at a picture or something.
Right.
And that was one of the things that always kind of stuck in the back of my head. But hung out with him, we went fishing a bunch. He's got a son, he was, I think, 8 or 9 at the time. He's like 13 now, or 12 or something like that. But he went fishing, did the same shit, hung out, saw as many people as I could. And then I shipped off to MCT.
All right, and then when does he pass away?
So shortly after MCT, they told me I'm going to Camp Johnson in North Carolina. I was like, fuck North Carolina, first of all. I get here, and I see here from January till about, backtrack. So we got to go home from MCT for like 18 days recruiter's assistance.
Right.
So I got to see him for like right after Thanksgiving and a little bit of Christmas and stuff like that. And that was the last time I saw him before he passed away. And I just remember like we went out to the snow machines and shit like that, did a whole bunch of crazy stuff. And that was the last time I saw him. And then went out to Camp Johnson from January till March when I picked up class. And about 2.5 weeks into class, they have a 5-week course. Got a call from John's mom. Hey, John had a heart attack last night, and I was in my room, and I looked at my roommate, and I was he kind of saw that something was wrong, and I asked, "Are you fucking serious? Like this isn't some prank? This isn't something real?" And her voice starts to crack. It's really quiet. He told him my brother had gone into cardiac arrest the night before. Sorry, I'm getting emotional.
It's all right.
And I kind of just hit my knees. I didn't know what to do with myself.
Hey, Josh, and how old is he?
He was 36 at the time.
Wow.
Yeah, it's been 2 years.
Right.
I talked to her for a minute. The phone kind of just went quiet after I kind of fell to my knees and started to tear up. And after a few minutes of quiet, I was like, "Is it going to be okay? What's going on?" They said he's in the hospital right now. His left arm had gone numb, and he had just kind of fell quiet at dinner and then fell out of his chair. And they rushed him to the hospital, and he sat in a coma for 2 weeks. And then a week before we graduated, we had just called our units, everything, told them, "Hey, this is me, I'll be there, blah, 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 there's someone coming to pick me up." And unfortunately, the day before that phone call, my mom had called me, and she had told me that John passed away that night. I texted my instructors, and I was like, I don't think I'm going to be able to come to class tomorrow, and my staffs aren't counting. I showed up. He's like, "Are you good?" I was like, "Well, my brother just passed away." And they're like, "Okay, well, we'll see if there's a Red Cross message." He said another. And I was like, "There's not going to be one. He's not my biological brother." And they're like, "Okay, well, we probably can't send you home or whatever." So I was like, "I don't want to get sent home anyway. He would be pissed off at me if he realized that I didn't graduate school just to come home to see him not there." So I finished school about a week. Well, the next day I called my unit. I let my mass sergeant know what was going on. And he ended up talking to my captain, talking to everybody. "Hey, this is what's going on," and they came to the conclusion, "Let's let this Marine go home, figure out his fucking life for a few days before he comes out so he can be fully mission capable as soon as he gets here." So I checked into my unit that Friday at 10 o'clock, and by 16:30 I was on a flight home, and my mom didn't know, John's mom didn't know, and I stayed in a hotel that night, and the next morning I showed up to the church in my blues, and John's mom just hit her knees. I kind of just walked in slowly in my blues, and everybody around me, all these like rough bikers wearing their leather cuts, everything, everybody just kind of put their heads down as I walked towards my mom with one single rose. In my place where they, because I was going to sit in the front row next to her, they just put basically a triangle full of American flags. They didn't think I was going to be able to make it. As soon as I walked up, she completely lost it. She'd already been crying. But she started to basically sob, and his son ran up to me, and I'll never forget it, because it was the same way that I looked at my cousin at his wedding that he looked at me when I was in uniform. And still to this day, this is kind of beside the point, but he always calls me, he always texts me off of his mom's phone and tells me how much he can't wait to be a Marine and stuff like that, simply because I did that. And that's fucking crazy to me, but to move on with that part, one of his old ass, like, super strung out friends or something like that was talking, and John's mom was like, "Get the fuck off the stage," because I was sitting there on the side getting ready to take my turn to talk, and I was basically the last one to talk after a few people. And I walk up there, and I fell silent for a minute because I had to gather my shit. I was pretty fucked up. And I walk up there, and I laughed a little bit. And I was like, "It's crazy to think that once upon a time, I was just the trouble kid that all you guys used to just give advice to, and all you guys used to do mentor, and I used to always see all you guys around John whenever he was doing whatever he was doing." And then everybody kind of fell silent, and I saw the officer in the crowd, and I looked at him, and he looked at me, and I saw tears rolling down his eyes. And I looked up at the crowd, and I said, "It's not for John." This is the moment that fucks me up the most. I'm sorry.
No, it's, hey, man, look, you don't have to apologize for anything. I mean, you've seen me do that thing a couple times, and I don't get through it without having to stop. So, first of all, Josh Gilkey, my guest today, and we're doing this because he sent me an email talking about seeing post-traumatic wing and the effect it had on him, and I wanted him to come on and share his story if he was willing to do it. And you know, Josh, the cool part about this stuff is that it's not easy, and people that listen to this stuff who go through similar shit, when they hear it, right, just like when you heard me talking, and that's not, those aren't things I dreamt up. That's stuff from real life, and so you don't got to say you're sorry or anything. I mean, it's the fight that we all have trying to get through it, so. Anyway.
Yeah. But, so I looked at him, and I saw, looked out in the crowd. This is probably max capacity, 300, 350 person church. And, every seat was filled, and there was people standing. And my brother affected the town a lot. Everybody knew him. He had millions of friends. And, I saw the officer that had put me in handcuffs the night that Johnny came and got me. And I looked out in the crowd to see all these people, and I said, if not for John, he told me it was either jail or the Marine Corps. And as I stand here today, you can obviously see the choice I made. And the roughest crowd of people you could ever imagine stood up and started clapping their hands, and my mom had to come get me off the stage because I had to sit down. I sat down, and I couldn't hold my tears, and I tried, but I uncontrollably sobbed on the front steps of the stage, and it was definitely one of the moments that always is taking me back. Even right now, talking about it, every time I talk about it, I get chills. Like, the amount of love and affection from all the people around to realize that the impact that one person had on a bunch of people's different lives just took me back.
So from there, though, the story gets worse, right? I mean, the impact on that he has and losing him out of your life is devastating to you, yes?
Yes, most definitely.
So talk to Sue. So how many years ago was that, 3?
Two. So, 2.5-ish. It happened in March.
So talk us through the last couple of years. So after you attend his funeral, then what?
So they only gave me 3 days of leave to go home and do this. So I stayed home the next day, hung out with family, kind of consoled the situation, hung out. And then the third day, Monday morning, I got on the flight, checked into my unit. My whole life, I've always been the outspoken, loud-ass, fucking smart-ass in the room. The first few minutes, nobody could really read me because I was super quiet and didn't know what to think about the Marine Corps, didn't know what the fuck was going on half the time, obviously, PFC. My brother had just passed away, so I was quiet and very... to myself,
right?
Because I didn't want to let anybody know I had problems. I didn't want to be labeled immediately as soon as I got there as the person that's fucked up. So I just kind of stuck to myself. My mass sergeant came in one day. He's like, "Hey, so there's two options," and I was like, "Okay." And he's like, "So you or Corporal Ramsey are going to go somewhere," and I was like, "Okay." He's like, "When he's going to go to Okinawa for 6 months, and when he's going to go to Mew." He's like, "What do you want to do?" I was like, "Well, we'll just rock, paper, scissors, or whatever," and then he came back the next day. He was like, "So they want an NCO for the Mew," so they took him to the Mew, and they took me to Okinawa, and so following that, went home on pre-deployment leave in August, and then came back, and we went to Okinawa, it was end of July, and then we went to Okinawa in August. And then sat over there. At the funeral, my mom had given me a small urn of my brother's ashes and a little blue box, like a little blue velvet box that had a picture of him and stuff like that. And I took it everywhere with me. I still do. I took it to England with me. I took it to Norway with me recently. Everywhere I go, I took it with me, and I took it with me, and it still kind of fucked me up while I was over there. I didn't know anybody in this battery. I'd been with headquarters battery for like 7 months. I didn't know anybody inside Echo Battery 210. I was just this little PFC, got promoted to Lance Corporal as soon as we got there. Stayed to myself. My roommate took me probably a month or two to take me out drinking. Drank a little bit, still super depressed and stuff like that. Basically, drink my way into sleep as often as I could because I couldn't sleep knowing that everybody back home was still struggling with it being super fresh. Constantly texting my mom, asking how everybody's doing, not being able to be there and like be there for anybody. As a strong a person as a Marine is, like I was one person that everybody tried to look to for console or to be the strongest, yet I felt like I was the weakest one, if that makes sense.
No, I mean, I talk about a lot of us fake mental health, right?
Yeah.
It's what we do. We know we're supposed to be strong, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yet when your life, you're not feeling like that, what do? We fake it. because, you know, I mean, people expect stuff of us and we don't want to fail them. And so we stuff our own stuff away and we try to be the things we're supposed to be, but it's not easy.
Definitely not. And then, so shortly after that, probably 4 months into the 6 month deployment, my mom and them, they got a grant to be able to put a headstone, or like a little plaque thing, and plant a tree in this park where John and myself and his son had gotten baptized a few years back in the river. They do this huge, I don't know if you've ever heard of Calvary Chapel Christian Church or whatever. They had a church in my hometown, and they do this big-ass baptism thing in the river. It's like the Snake River. It's one of the biggest rivers in the Rocky Mountains, and all three of us did it together, and so we thought it was appropriate to put it down there by the river. And after the deployment, I went home on post-deployment leave, and every single night, it wouldn't matter if I was with my friends, my girlfriend, whoever, family. By the end of the night, I was incoherently drunk and laying next to his headstone. Couldn't handle it. I still refused to believe that he was gone, because coincidentally, the year mark of him passing away was like 10 days after our leave block ended. So I was home just before his 1 year mark, and it was fucking me up a lot, because I'd seen all these memories on Facebook from everybody send prayers, everybody like pray for John, this, that, and the other when he was still in a coma, and everybody had surrounded me when I came home because they knew that was about to happen. Right. They knew that I was definitely going to be struggling. I had just been gone from my family in a different country that I've never been to in my life. Still pretty new to the Marine Corps, and I looked to my family immediately for counsel, and every single night John's mom would come out to the headstone and find me in the middle of the night. She just somehow knew that I would be there every single night, whether it was freezing fucking cold or whether it was hot as hell. I was there incoherently drunk and soaked in tears. I would sometimes be asleep. I would sometimes would be awake. It would all just depend on how early she got there. And she would take me home, and I would fall asleep at my mom's house.
So did you look for any other help, Josh?
I mean, I talked to the chaplain, and that was really about it. Talked to my family about it. Because I've never really lost anybody significant like that. I didn't really know how to handle myself. It seemed alcohol was pretty much the only thing that numbed everything and just made me go to sleep without having some sort of nightmare or having some sort of thoughts of, like, even the good thoughts or the amazing memories we have. They would bring a smile to my face for a few minutes and then tears would start rolling, you know? And so I didn't really seek out help because I didn't want people to think, like Marines are supposed to be, I didn't want people to think, oh, he's weak, oh, he's this, that, and the other. So I never really like reached out to anybody, and 2-3 days before the leave block ended, I decided that, you know, I can't go through life. I can't do this crap anymore. Everything's too damn crazy. Like, I'm completely destroyed. I'm unhappy. I can't do life without my brother. And I ended up trying to hang myself, and the rope actually snapped. And that was, like, the moment where my brother almost kicked me in the fucking throat. I was like, what the fuck are you doing? You have so much to live for. You make so many people proud. Like, there's so much more to life that you can go do. And just do it as if you were doing it through me.
But you didn't you didn't feel any of that before that happened?
No, I didn't. And that was the one thing that my mom, well, John's mom, constantly tells me is, anytime I get sad about it, or anytime, because she's the one that I talk to the most about anything, anytime I ever start thinking about him. I talk to her, and she's the one that always tells me that, you know, anything that ever happens, you know, it's through him, right? Like, recently, I was driving down, I don't know the road, it's right by the post office on Kent Lejeune, but I was driving, and I was talking to my Lance Corporal about how the 2 year mark of my brother is coming up, stuff like that, and I started to cheer up a little bit, and fucking out of nowhere, a deer runs into the side of my car, and I texted my mom about it, and texted John's mom about it, and she's like, you know why that happened, right? And I was like, well, I know why, and she's like, because you were being a sad little bitch. John didn't want you to be a sad little bitch. And so, small stuff like that.
Tough love, man, that's tough.
She's not wrong, like, she struggles with it just as much as I do, because that's her baby boy, you know, that's right. That's her only son, and so after I had tried doing that to myself, I came back to the unit. I was still pretty to myself about shit. I had a sergeant that had just gotten back from a deployment. He's a complete fucking prick, and it felt like everything was still kind of against me, but at that point, I had realized, you know what, I'm tired of being the pay for me. Like, I had something in myself that I need to set out and prove. So then I was like, all right, well, if you want to treat me like this, if you guys want to treat me this way because I'm to myself, because I have anger pent up in myself because of the situations in my life, then I'm going to go get it, and I'm going to become the leader. I'm going to become the person that says how shit goes, says how fucking turbo is downhill every day. And so I sought out for it, and I became a corporal in October, and now I'm in charge of 3 different Marines, and I got married in August, and everything's slowly, like, starting to come together, I guess you could say.
So, talk to me about you walk in, and you don't know anything about post-traumatic wing, and you hear, you know, yeah, it's more suicide, it's more resilient training, and whatnot. So you sit in there and talk to me about that experience.
So back in, I think it was January, they were like, yeah, we got to go to Camp Johnson, it's a mandatory class, and about everybody murmured suicide, this, that, and the other. So, oh, fuck, we got to go to another damn class, blah, blah, blah. Same normal Marine fucking banter about having to do another damn class.
Right.
I show up, and I was really kind of interested, uninterested at the start, until General Furness started to tear up and tell his story and tell things. And I was like, oh, fuck, maybe, you know, like, holy shit, they're trying to, like, not just talk to us about normal everyday shit. They're trying to hit on levels that are, like, deep down personal. Like, I'm a fucking person just like you. As everybody always says, I put my pants on the same way you do every day. And as I started to, like, piece things together, as I started to hear these stories from you, the other presenters, from General Furness, I just started to take myself, and in the middle of the presentation, I texted my wife, and I was like, you need to buy me this book. And she's like, why, what's it about, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, you need to buy me this fucking book. And she's just like, well, what do you need it for? Is it for your career? Is it for some sort of school? I was like, just buy me a damn book. And she bought the book, and I started reading into it. And the
book you're talking about is Struggle Well, right?
Yep.
Right.
And I bought it. I read it a little bit. I haven't finished it yet. I try and read as often as I can, but
right.
Because I'm on corporal squish right now, my life is fucking consumed by writing a paper and presentations and making sure my uniform's good and studying and all sorts of shit. But, so I read it a little bit, and I started to think about it more and think back in my life and think back at some of the examples that you guys gave, specifically, your sister's story hit me the most, as if, like, my me not going home or me not, like, trying to help out in certain ways, I feel like sometimes him dying was my fault or something like that, or, like, yeah, like your sister's kids were, how you guys kind of felt like it could have been prevented or that there were signs that it was going to happen and stuff like that. Like, I felt like if I could have gone home while he was in a coma, I could have prevented him from dying and stuff like that. And reading the book and coming to the class the second time, it made me realize, look, like, nothing you could have done could have prevented him from passing away. Everything happened the way it happened for some fucking God-known reason, and you just got to strive through it one step at a time every single day, and that you have to constantly put one foot in front of the other. You can't sink down to your knees and try to crawl. You have to be able to stand and walk one foot in front of the other.
Not easy, though, man, right? I mean, every example you talk about, right, I think the natural reaction is, right, is that we could have prevented or there was something that could have been done about it. And, you know, and I think just as human beings, we're predisposed to do that. And so, I mean, this, and the stuff we're talking about is not easy stuff to deal with. It's life-changing, you know, traumatic stuff. The I'm curious. So when you saw it the first time, did you go back and talk with the other Marines that had seen it? Did you talk to friends about it? What? And so it's in your head. And what are you thinking? Like, I'm not as screwed up as I thought I was, and what I'm going through is normal. Who did you talk to, and what were you thinking about?
Well, the first thing I did was I was riding back with my sergeant, the same corporal that got sent on the Mew. Him and I are pretty good friends now. I was riding back, and we were just kind of like silent. There was no song on the radio, nothing was going on. And he could tell something was up with me. He's like, "Are you good?" And like a tear started to roll down my face. And I stayed quiet. And I was just like, well, just thinking about sitting through that class made me start really thinking about my brother again. Really kind of just set off some sort of trigger in me that, made me really think hard about everything that I've done in the past 2 years, everything that has happened in my life in the last 2 years. And I sat there and I sat there and I just kept thinking to myself, like, yeah, he's gone. But at the same time, how can I affect someone else's life the way that these people came into my life today and showed me that just because something this crazy happens doesn't mean you can smile through the pain and be able to live with some of the shit that goes on in your life, whether it be, oh, cool, you only got 2 ribbons, you've never been on a combat deployment. I'm going, fuck, if I've never seen combat, I've seen some shit that's probably crazier than any fucking shit that you saw sitting in the middle of the desert. Like, and so I thought about that, like...
You know what, I mean, that's a huge part of the presentation is us getting over that nonsense about, yeah, well, it's got to be, you know, combat-related or deployment-related or whatever. And I think everybody, once they hear that, it's not a point that, you know, you have to, you know, talk about a whole lot, you know, because I think we've all lived through it. And you know, where you got your ass beat when you were a little kid by a drunken parent or whoever, that is every bit as traumatic as the things people see, you know, in combat. And you know, and I make the point that, you know, all the stuff that, you know, people I know have seen, none of us are even close to my sister, you know, or Elizabeth Smart that have been through things like that. And so you don't even have to beat it up. And it's really interesting from teaching it, when you look out in the audience, you can see just the heads bobbing, and you know that just about everybody in that audience has something that they deal with. And that's a huge moment in the whole presentation to get them to understand that, you know, and get them to stop saying that I can't have PTSD, I've never been to combat. Well, no, you can be traumatized. And that's a huge moment. The other really powerful thing, Josh, and you just said something to it, mentioned it a little bit, is how do I use what I've gone through to change somebody else's life? Because that's your brother, man. That's your brother working through you, changing somebody else's life. That's really powerful. Why did that speak to you so much, do you think?
Well, I just thought about it the way you guys have gone through some crazy shit, and like you were just saying, you don't ever, it's not like you have to go through some sort of combat to have something happen in your life, where everybody's everyday people with some Some people have more than spectacular everyday problems that they go through, and some people just have some everyday, oh, I ran out of gas type shit. But to not stray from the point, when you guys started talking about how you took their problems, you took your problems, and you started helping other people through their problems, I realized that at some point, someone else along the line has seen some shit, or had some shit happen to them, or had someone pass away in their life, and that, you know, not everybody's alone in the fact that people fucking die. Like, people die every single day.
Right.
And so I figured if I could be the person to talk about how my brother passed away, how fucking crazy my life got, and how I made it to where I am now through the fucking years of my life, why can't I be a person to console someone else about it?
So, Josh, you hear that, and it reaches down into you, and it conjures up, you know, doing for somebody else what your brother did for you?
Basically, yeah.
And that, is there a more powerful instinct in your body than that which your brother taught you?
It definitely was one of the things that I pull to myself every single day when I wake up, that no matter what is going on, no matter what the hell someone else has going on, but you need to be able to realize people have shit going on in their lives, and if you need to stop and take 5 minutes in a day to say, hey, are you fucking good, then do that. That 5 minutes could be the difference in someone fucking completely changing their lives forever, for instance, me trying to commit suicide versus, yeah, hey, let's step outside and talk about it for a minute, and then they're fucking good. Like, that could be a life-changing, turnable moment for someone, for all you know. For all you know, they could be thinking about, hey, in the next 2 hours, I'm going to go to my room and try and down a bottle of Jack and 1,500 pills. And you could talk to them, and then all of a sudden, their whole mentality could change.
And it could be just that conversation, too. That's how powerful those conversations are when, you know, especially when you're not saying the same tired things that people tend to say, which are things like time heals all wounds, you know.
Fuck that.
Exactly.
It doesn't.
No, it doesn't even come close. And so, but when you hear that stuff and you're hurting so bad, my experience in doing this, and I'm really fortunate, and I talk about it in the class, I'm the coolest person that I know, because I have these experiences every day now, and I'm telling you, Josh, the more people you touch, the more you listen and hear people's pain, and the more you just look at them and say, hey man, you got a minute? I mean, that's every time that through you, your brother reaches out and changes another life. Except now, it's not just him doing it, it's you and him doing it together, which is really powerful stuff. Alright, we're gonna take a break. More from Josh Gilkey coming up next on All Marine Radio, right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when the group can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
I'm good, but I have a story, and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in the crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. But are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
All right, that's called Southern Cross by Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, and I played because a friend of mine sent me an email and said, hey, that was good. You might want to do that again. So, there you go. Because I'm in a good mood today. We continue a conversation with Marine Corporal Josh Gilkey. And he, a member of the 2nd Marine Division, saw post-traumatic winning twice now. And so, Josh, you were just talking about, you know, things that you can do, and I want to talk to you from the perspective if you're the person that needs help, and what would you say to people? And so if you're the person down in that hole, what do you say to them? Because that hole, you know, you were in it, seems kind of hopeless. You know, could you have ever envisioned that you would be, you know, that you would be giving other people advice about getting out of that black hole?
No, and never in my life, after everything happened, I thought that 100% life was just kind of out to get me. I never would have once thought that at one point in my life, that my brother dying and the negative situation surrounding it would 180 and become something so positive in my life.
That's amazing, isn't it? I mean, to go from black to thinking that, you know what, there's nothing I can do about it, but I can attempt to turn it to a positive and use that to touch other people. So out of that blackness, what do you tell people? What would you say? So if somebody's listening and they're in that blackness right now, what would your message be for them?
So the sun's going to come up tomorrow, most definitely. No matter what crap you go through any day, no matter how hard things seem to go, as soon as the clock strikes midnight, a whole nother day starts. It's a whole nother day where you could positively affect someone, where you could go out and say, this is what's going to happen today, and you're going to be the one that's going to make it happen. That's as simple as that.
As you have sat through those classes, I'm curious now, did you get something out of it listening to it the second time that you didn't get out the first time? Did it sound different to you because of sitting through it once and obviously the way it's impacted you?
So the first time it was more or less, I was more pulled in, more engaged, more persuaded into the fact of everything that was presented and spoke about. And the second time, all of that, I just kept thinking in my head was, shit, he's right. Shit, he's right. Shit, he's right. Like, every single time. And then I would sit there and I would nudge my friend next to me and I was like, see, I told you. See, I told you. Because she was going through some shit about her father passing away. And I was like, I really think this would be a good class for you to go to. And I'm glad that our instructors are making us go. And she ended up liking it, so.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Now, talk to us about other leaders, because, you know, one of the things that I think, and I think the Second Division is doing the right thing, but, you know, we counsel about performance, we counsel about conduct, but we don't really, you know, getting to know somebody and trying to help them get their hands around their life, and whether it be, you know, save more money, whether it be, you know, they're struggling with their marriage and making sure they understand that, you know, what's available to them to go help with those situations, you know, eating better, nutrition. And you know, we talked about in the class, you know, better human being, better person, better Marine, better warfighter. And I'd be curious about your thoughts, because a lot of people are like, geez, I don't know if I really want to, as a leader, if I really don't want to talk to him about his personal business. But to me, my experience is that Marines are dying to talk, and uh-huh. and they want to talk. I'd be curious about your thoughts on that.
Well, specifically, I got a good example. So after I saw the first post-traumatic wing, we kind of like hit a they're doing this Marine mindset class thing now. Talk about a topic or whatever, and I go to our Marines and we talk to them, make sure everything's mentally and physically sound or whatever. And like one of the things that I know that I've been practicing as an NCO, as somewhat of a leader, my Marines, I'll ask them like, "Are you good?" And then when they just give me some bullshit, "Yeah, I'm fine," answer, like I'll be like, "Oh, okay, now really, fucker, are you good? Like, what? Tell me what's going on. How's mom? How's dad?" Like. Sometimes, like, you don't poke and prod, like, "Hey, how are you doing with grandma's death?" It's, you have to, you don't go straight for the fucking kill. You have to poke your way around it and see if they'll try and open up. If they don't open up, they don't open up. But if you ask them how mom, how dad is, how brother, how this class is going, how that class is going, you can get them to feel this sense of, holy shit, like, he actually kind of gives a shit, you know?
You know what's amazing about that is just the small parts of leadership when you do get to know somebody. And you know, let's just say you're getting ready to step off and you're headed to the field and, you know, everybody's, you know, piled out there with their gear and we're, you know, the unit's doing all that. And all you do is you walk up to somebody and you look at them and say, "How you doing?" And they're like, "All right." And then you look at them again and you say, "Are you really? Are you good?" And they look at you the second time, and they're like, "Yeah, I'm good. Thank you. You know, thanks, Corporal." You know, and you don't have to get in that person's ass to do, you know, you know what I'm saying? When they know you care about them, I mean, it's a pretty amazing leadership tonic, because that link and that you're looking out for me and that you care and I can go to you and talk is, I think, one of the most fundamental pieces of leadership. Now, you can boss somebody around because you're nominally in charge, or you can lead them. And I don't know if you can lead them if you don't know them, which is I think, exactly what you're just talking about. Tell me something. So what's next for you in all this? You were you and I were talking before we came on, and you were telling me that that your mom has bought Struggle Well and was reading it. Obviously this is affecting more than just you and your family.
Yeah, so talked to her actually last night on the phone. She called me out of nowhere, and I was just cooking dinner, and she called me and she's like, "Joshua." And I was like, "Yes, Mom?" I thought I was in trouble. I was like, "Oh shit."
Yeah.
And she's like, "I got the mail today." And I was like, "Oh yeah? What specifically did you get? Like, I feel like something's coming up here." She's like, "Well, I got that book." And I was like, "Okay." And she's like, "I couldn't put the fucker down for about an hour and a half after I opened it." And I was like, "Oh, really?" And she just said, "This shit's powerful." And she went on to talk about, like, holy shit, like, it almost reached out and grabbed me by the heart, talked to me about John, talked to me about other shit that I've gone through in my 70 years of life. 60, 50, whatever people, however, everybody goes through issues, basically.
Right.
And right after she got done talking about all that, so one of John's friends, Chad, he's been in combat a few times, and he goes up to this town. It's about 45 minutes away from our hometown to see a counselor and all that. She goes, I'm going to buy Chad a book because he goes through some shit just like this, goes through all the trauma that a lot of people go through. So she bought it and thought it was amazing, and now he's buying it, and it's starting to, she's going to show a bunch of her friends, stuff like that, so kind of a ripple effect. It was, kind of feels good.
Kind of, right? The, it's awesome stuff. I can't, and I love the way when somebody hears it and understands it almost, well, immediately, they can go home, they can pick up the phone and say, hey, I want to talk to you. And they, in very short order, can change somebody else's life. And I think that is the coolest, one of the coolest parts of post-traumatic winning is, like, there's something in us, especially, I think, if you've gravitated towards the Marine Corps, and what's in us is this service thing that we, you know, that's in us. And, you know, so I think that is a huge part of why it makes sense to Marines. It's like, well, not only couldn't I use it to help myself, but you know what? I know so-and-so, and I know so-and-so, and I know so-and-so, and they need to read this. And all of a sudden, they read it, and they call you back and go, say what your mother said, and then she's going to give it to, you know, your friend. And so I think that's one of the coolest parts, because now, man, look at the number of people that you've impacted, and that number is just going to get bigger. And I just think it's the coolest part. Tell me something about all of this, Josh, that you have in your head before I let you go, that you want to make sure people know.
I just want everybody that has either listened or that has gone through some sort of trauma. Like I was explaining to my mom last night after she told me she cracked the book open. Everything in life, there's going to be hardships. Whether you're rich, you're poor, whether you have had a crazy experience in life, whether you've had a simple life with almost no issues, which it's hard to believe. But no matter what you go through, no matter how hard things get, the sun's always going to come up tomorrow. Everything happens for a reason, and as shitty and cliche as that sounds, it's going to happen, and it's almost a way of God saying, okay, here's the hand I'm dealing you. I want you to play it. I want you and you only to handle it the way that either A, you can handle it, and the way that people around you will be affected by the way you handle it. And so if people can go out every single day, embrace their struggles, embrace the problems in their life versus letting them beat them down and put them in a corner, I think that people will realize that traumatic stress and problems in their life, they're not necessarily easily overcomable, but there's ways to get through it without alcohol, without pills, without endless hours of expensive-ass counseling and hopelessness. There's ways around it, and there's ways to cope. It just takes for someone with the right hammer to hit you in the head.
I love that fucking hammer, man. Josh, first of all, I want to thank you for taking time out of your day to do this, and I just want to say I'm incredibly proud of you, and for me, you're a part of my story, right, where when you talk about your mom and your friend, I mean, that's the way I talk about you, because there's so many people out there, and I find this out as I go around the country, there's so many people out there that have so much that they deal with, and they do it in silence, and they do hear things like time heals all wounds, and they know it, and it just makes them feel worse. And so all of a sudden you hear the truth from a culture like our culture that the whole nation knows, and people look at it and they're like, wow, I'd like to I'd like to investigate that. And all of a sudden they investigate it, and then they touch somebody else with it. And all of a sudden the clouds begin to part, and the sun might not come out completely right away, but they can see the road to a better existence, and it starts with confronting the truth, and then it just gets better when you touch somebody else's life and you give of yourself. And so you're a great example of it, man. I just want to tell you that anything I can do to help you as you touch other people's lives, you know how to get a hold of me. I want to congratulate you for turning your own life around and being open to that message. And I also want to tell you, man, every person you touch is somebody that your brother touches. And good on you for that. And he will never leave, right, as long as you keep touching people with his spirit, and his spirit lives in you, and it'll live in them. And I just want to congratulate you for honoring him like that. And somewhere he's looking down at you, you know, beaming with pride, saying, you know what? That's my boy. That's the man I raised. So congratulations on all that, man.
Yeah, appreciate it. It means a lot. And you just saying all that, I like started getting goosebumps and shit.
No, let me just tell you. I mean, I'm sure it sounds a little bit like your brother. It's the truth, right? And and you're a great example of it.
Nice. Appreciate it, man.
Not a problem. All right. That is Corporal Josh Bielke, 2nd Marine Division. More of All Marine Radio coming up on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.